Blog Talk Radio.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Monday, August the 9th. As we like to do on Mondays, we'll be chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. We call it the Week in Review, and I don't recall a Sunday or a Monday that we've done one of these shows before with so much to review. So let's get right to it. Bill, how's everything going in New York, Bill?
Well, you know, at this point, Silvio, we don't know. It's remarkable. I was just writing last night to some political friends of mine who were visiting a Midwest state, and I said, make sure to keep up with the news in New York, because when they come back, there will be new rules in place or new rules about to go into place about where you can go, what you have to wear, what you can have for breakfast, how many kids you can have. I mean, they're going to institute new rules because of the resurgence of the pandemic. And just at the time when New York was starting to emerge from the disease, and we thought we were on the way back, but now we don't know. We don't know. It's the big question mark, because at what point do people just give up, you know, and just say, you know, I'd rather live in another state, or this city is not going to come back. So we do have one great hope here in New York, and I'm not in New York City. I'm just north of New York City, but there will be a new mayor in January. He will probably be Eric Adams if he wins the election in November, and as a Democrat, he is almost certain to win, and maybe there will be better leadership. Now, of course, we have a state problem, which has really turned into a crisis. We have a governor who is essentially inoperative because he's under so many charges, not necessarily legal charges, but charges in the press, charges by individual women who claim that he acted inappropriately, a state attorney general report on him, which is completely negative, and many demands that he resign. He doesn't seem to want to resign. He seems to want to choose the Bill Clinton approach, which is simply to wait it out. And he's not under any legal obligation to resign because of the charges, unless, of course, he's impeached and removed. And that could still happen. But he is a man who shows no indication of leaving. And we could have essentially an empty chair in the governor's office for quite some time.
Yes, well, it is amazing to me how everybody's running away from him. Yes. It reminds me of something my late mother said whenever she would hear about these politicians who had these women problems. My mother would always say, why didn't they say something before? Why is it that they all do it at the same time? And I know that maybe that's a little simplistic, but my mother always thought that there was always something more to it than just a woman problem, that maybe there was another reason that this was coming out. And in the case of Cuomo, many people are suspecting that I'm not defending what he did. That's not obviously what he did was wrong if the allegations are true. But that all of a sudden they waited until now when everybody knew that this was going on. As I read, everybody knew this was going on for years. But all of a sudden, summer of 2020 or 2021, and it's time to get Cuomo. I don't know. Is it too cynical, Bill, to think that way?
In New York, nothing is too cynical. I mean, you know, if you would tell me that he is under attack from the government in Albania for some grudge that they have against his family from 300 years ago, I'd say that's right. Yeah, that's the way things work here. Yes, there is this factor. The woman who is state attorney general, Letitia James, who is, by the way, a very far left activist, wants to be governor. Mm-hmm. And this is a great way to become governor. You can control the investigation. You control what gets released. Cuomo would be, in her mind perhaps, this is just a theory, forced out of office, and there'd be and he is up for re-election next year, so mm-hmm. Letitia James could run for his seat as the heroine who removed an illegally acting governor. Now, of course, the problem with that is that when you find the person behind the investigation running to succeed the person she's investigated, it does look a little funny. But in New York, the standards are so low that, you know, unless she goes up and shoots him directly,
right.
I think she would still be elected governor.
Well, this is when you, at times like these, this is when you really wish there was a Republican Party that could actually run a candidate because, I mean, New York, the state and the city, the opportunities for an opposition candidate have never been better. And yet,
yes.
it looks like all you're going to have is just a change of name, but there's still going to be a Democrat. And if that lady gets in, the attorney general, you're talking about somebody far to the left. And that's not, I mean, you're there. I'm here in Texas, so you know better than me. But another candidate moving the state further to the left is the last thing New York needs right now, Bill.
That's right. And it would be a very interesting situation because Letitia James is an African-American woman. The new mayor of New York, Eric Adams, or assumed new mayor of New York, is an African-American man. The difference, of course, is that Letitia James is on the real left. I mean, she is mm-hmm. way out there. She's in the AOC territory, whereas Eric Adams, who calls himself quite openly the future of the Democratic Party, is a moderate.
Mm-hmm.
He's
yes.
a former New York City police captain. And although he's been critical of the police, he is a cop. And you could have this very interesting situation of two people of color, one a black woman, one a black man, in a situation where they both need each other. The city depends on the state for a great deal, and the state has certain powers over the city. On the other hand, governor has to have that Democratic base in New York City operating for her or him, because that is where the votes come from. So that could be a very interesting combination, and one in which they would clash. Right now, it is very well known that the governor and the mayor of New York, a comrade de Blasio, who is, you know, a man who has a love affair in his heart with Fidel Castro, that mm-hmm. they don't get along at all. They find it very hard to work together, and is not helping the people of the state or the city.
Yes. I have a funny feeling, Bill, that this Cuomo story is going to linger for a while because I don't think he wants to leave. And he's going to, like you're saying, he's going to hang on as long as he can. And who knows, he may not get – I'm not familiar with the New York State impeachment procedures, but if they're anything like the federal procedures, you got to get two-thirds in the Senate. And he may survive that, Bill. He may survive it. So, you know, I don't know.
He might. He might because – public opinion polls sometimes are very strange on these things. Cuomo is not a particularly unpopular figure. I mean, he's not a person that people generally hate. Last year, he became, in the eyes of CNN, America's governor, because he would hold these daily press conferences in which he presumed to lead the country rather than labor through Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And he had a great deal of prestige. There was a lot of talk that he would be the Democratic candidate for president in last year, in 2020, and that he might jump into the last minute. Well, he didn't. But then they said, well, maybe 2024 or something. And he was considered very much one of the leaders of the Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm.
Wrote a book during the period. His brother is a news reporter for CNN, Chris Cuomo, and the Cuomos were riding high. His father had been a distinguished governor, and then all of a sudden the stuff started to come out about him, and it also, far more important than these allegations, although they are very important, is the fact that he has been held responsible by many people in the state for a very large death rate among elderly
mm-hmm.
people when the pandemic first started, because he presided over an administration that was putting COVID-positive people into nursing homes with others. And the death rate was extremely high. So I don't know if he comes back from this politically. I mean, I don't know if he could come back, be governor, be reelected governor, and run for president at some point. The damage is pretty heavy, but it is New York. You know, again,
right.
It's New York. New York has a history going back to James Walker, Jimmy Walker, who was basically a crook who was mayor of New York. They made a film about him, Bo James with Bob Hope playing Jimmy Walker. And it has a history also of investigations. The investigations of the police, investigations of public officials, the Knapp Commission, which investigated police. Then there was the Seabury investigation, which was one of the things that helped Franklin Roosevelt become governor of New York before becoming president of the United States. So there's a long history of kind of living with corruption. We don't know where it goes. You made a very good comment when you said it would be interesting if the Republican Party could actually run a statewide race in New York. The Republican Party in New York seems to operate from the fifth hole of a golf course somewhere.
That's right.
And I don't even know who the state chairman is. I think it may still be Ed Cox, who was Richard Nixon's son-in-law. I mean, that's how far back this goes. And there are candidates. I mean, we had Governor Pataki, who was a Republican governor. The state was just as Democratic when he was elected. But they just don't make an effort. They really don't make an effort. They need a state organization that is vivid and alive and ready to fight.
Well, Bill, you know, we'll see if Cuomo is serious, because if all of a sudden, you know how companies do a name change when they have a little bad PR? So if, let's say starting next week, his name is Mario Cuomo and no longer Andrew, and now he goes by A. Mario Cuomo, you know, capital A, Mario Cuomo.
That's right.
And he starts running as Mario, and his brother on CNN starts referring to him as my brother Mario, you know, who never wanted to use that name in respect to our lovely dad. But now, of course, you know, he wants to be known as Mario. So if he does that, then maybe there's a chance. Or maybe if he borrows a line from Jesse Jackson, used to refer to him as Governor Cuomo. He wouldn't say Cuomo.
Yes.
He'd say Cuomo. So maybe that's it, Bill. That's the idea. You do a name change, a pronunciation change, and maybe people will forget about it, Bill. Look, you say it is New York, after all.
Yes. Yes. And they'll believe anything here. And, of course, being New York, most of the press will go for any Democrat. Dead or alive.
That's right.
I mean, you could nominate somebody living in a cemetery, well, not living, but in a cemetery, and half the press would support him, because it's New York.
Yes, unfortunately, that's right, and it's a shame, because I think the people are really getting the short end, and the state is being devastated, the city of New York, to say the least, also. But, you know, I have a feeling we'll be talking about it next week, because this is, I think, an extra inning ball game. Without question. Bill, I do want to bring up, this is a very sad subject. There was a police officer in Chicago, a young woman, 29 years old police officer. I think her last name is French. And she was shot in the city of Chicago with her partner. I think he was shot too, although he's in critical condition. The young police officer is dead. And I don't know. I don't know what else has to happen in Chicago for the outrage to blow up. But how does the mayor of Chicago come out and say that, it's about the guns, you know? Gee, if we only had more gun laws, people wouldn't kill police officers. Well, I'd like to know how this guy got the gun in the first place. I bet he didn't buy it at a gun shop.
No, he didn't. He didn't buy it in a boutique. I'm sure he didn't keep it in a gun safe at home.
No,
the mayor is outrageous. This is about race again. The young police officer who was killed, young woman, had just come back to active duty from maternity leave. She's just
my
had
God.
A baby.
I didn't know that. You know? So she was a young mother as well. Oh my gosh.
Yes, young mother. Had the baby, returning to active duty, and is shot. Her partner is shot. And the mayor made a halfway decent statement. We pray for them and all the rest. But then she comes out with this foolishness about guns. It's we're facing a common enemy, no matter who we are in Chicago. Guns. No, we're facing an enemy called criminals.
Yeah.
And they just can't bring themselves to say it because it's a racial subject. And I don't know where it goes. Chicago has lived with this for a long time. There have been better periods in the city's history. You know, I went to the University of Chicago, so I've lived in Chicago. And back when decades ago, I went to college before George Washington became president.
Yes.
And,
I think the Dodgers were still in Brooklyn, Bill, when you were going to college, right?
They were actually just in the process of leaving. But
I knew the
true.
Answer.
You know,
I just wanted to tease you.
Yes. They were leaving, and so I left New York. I mean, that was a perfectly logical thing to do. But even then, the crime situation was so bad that the University of Chicago was actually seriously thinking of trying to buy the campus of Northwestern University, which is right outside Chicago in Evanston,
right.
And just move. And instead, they decided ultimately not to, but instead they bought up a lot of property around the university and plowed it under. And, you know, they called it urban renewal. That was the name for it. It was actually to remove part of the population and to replace it with people from the university, and that might help the crime problem. It did. It did.
Right.
But the crime problem now is citywide. It is violent. It is giving Chicago a terrible, terrible reputation.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the problems of Chicago is that it is the seat of black power in America. It is the seat of Louis Farrakhan, of Jesse Jackson, of Barack Obama, who I don't know if he actually lives there anymore, but he came from Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And the demands of black leaders are taken very seriously by whoever is mayor, whether those demands are proper or not. So you have a situation where, for goodness sake, I can't imagine any African-American in Chicago happy about what's happening. They're afraid to let their children go outside, and yet the leaders are, at best, they're mildly concerned. But this should be a national emergency. They should already be talking about, if necessary, and I don't know what the constitutionality of this is, of calling up National Guard units to augment the police. But politically, it's impossible.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Bill, because the police chief in Chicago right now is a gentleman named David Brown. Yeah, I think it is David. Brown is the last name. David is his first name. And he was the police chief in Dallas. And when he became the police chief in Chicago, I was actually optimistic because he's a straight shooter. He's not he's a straight shooter. And he was the one, for example, remember when those five police officers were killed in Dallas back in 2015?
Oh, yes. Oh, sure.
Remember that? He was the one who spoke. He was the one who spoke at the funeral and said something along the lines of, you know, you got lousy public schools, lousy family, and then they expect us to take care of the problem, talking about the police. And I thought that was such a – he took a shot there at everybody, especially the Democrat leadership. And I'm hoping that he will speak out more. He's got no allegiance to the mayor, so heck, I wish he would run for mayor, David Brown. I think he would be an improvement. But anyway, I was so sad to hear that a 29-year-old officer was killed, and now you make it even worse by saying that this is a young woman who came back from maternity. What a terrible story. I just hope that – and where is the governor, Bill, of Illinois? Where is the governor? You would think that this would be a priority. You would think that the governor would be the one showing some interest. I mean, where is the governor? No, I mean, this guy just sits in wherever the governor's mansion is and does nothing.
Springfield.
Yeah.
It's Governor Pritzker. He's one of the wealthiest men in the state.
Right.
The Pritzker family is a very, very prominent Chicago family. Pritzker School of Medicine, the university is named for them. I don't know anything about him except that we've had this thing over and over and over again of governors who just throw up their hands because the political power of Chicago is dominant in the state of Illinois. And they could have the most ethical, the best governor, and it would make no difference. And they have sent, by the way, to Congress, Illinois has, some very fine United States senators. They had Everett Dirksen, who was Senate Minority Leader. They had Paul Douglas, who I worked for, a wonderful man. They had Paul Simon, another wonderful man. They have had prominent people, but they go to the United States Senate, and there's not much they can do for their state. The state is in such bad shape.
And financially, too, from what I understand, the state is in very bad shape also. But what a terrible news about the young woman officer, and we certainly pray for the recovery of her partner, but that mayor of Chicago should be ashamed of herself. She ought to show some leadership and at least say something good about the police. That would be a good moment to say it. I understand they're losing a lot of police officers and they're having a hard time recruiting, and I wonder why, Bill. Why would anybody want to work in that environment? If you want to be a police officer, I can think of lots of cities in the country where you would have a much more enjoyable career. I mean, it's always a risk, but in Chicago, it seems to be a much higher risk. It's just absolutely horrible. Bill, before we take a break, I do want to bring up the topic of Afghanistan, because I know everybody wants to get out, and I certainly don't want to be in a fighting force there forever, but we were not in a fighting force. In fact, more people in Chicago were killed this weekend than we've lost in Afghanistan in a military way. And we've pulled the troops. I guess we're in the process of pulling them out. Afghanistan is about to be taken over by the bad guys again. I have got to believe this is going to be a problem that Joe Biden or whoever succeeds him is going to regret, Bill. This is not something that had to happen. It's sort of like the border. It's like so many other things. They did not have to happen because whatever was in place was actually working well. We had a presence in Afghanistan. We were not fighting anybody. Most of these guys were there in a defensive posture. My son was at one of those bases last year, a couple of years ago, and it was not a fighting position. They were not attacking anybody. They were basically there in a defensive insurance policy type position, and now everything's going to be overrun, Bill. I hate to think what's going to happen to the little girls or the women of Afghanistan when these guys actually fully take over, Bill.
Yes, and notice in that regard the silence of the women's movement in the United States. It's disgraceful what they do, the lack of support. You're right on everything. This did not have to happen. We have a corrupt memory in America, which is brought about by a corrupt university system and a corrupt press. People don't realize that we have been in Korea for 71 years. 71. We became involved in Korea on June 25th, 1950, when the North Koreans invaded. We have been involved ever since and have had troops in Korea for that long period, for that 71-year period. We have been in Germany even longer. We occupied Germany after the defeat of the Nazi regime in 1945. We still have troops there. The 20 years in Afghanistan is actually not a long period of time, as long as most of the fighting was done by the Afghans, and I think it was. But by just pulling out like this before the situation allowed it, it's going to result, as you say, in a takeover by the very people we were there to defeat. And what message does it send around the world? One is that America is an unreliable ally that we can't depend it upon. People will bring up the fact that we left the Vietnamese in a difficult situation, even though they had fought side by side for us with us during the Vietnam War. There used to be a cliche in foreign relations that the worst thing you can be in the world is an ally of the United States. Now, that's not true. We have been very loyal to many of our allies, but unfortunately there are these exceptions where we just decide we've had enough and we leave, and we don't stabilize the situation. I think that virtually everyone that I can think of who I respect in foreign policy warned that we were leaving in a bad way, and that eventually we're going to lose the country and we are going to be humiliated again. And you don't want to be humiliated in foreign relations. It has repercussions all over the world.
Yeah, and, why are we going to have to now go back, which is, I think, what we'll have to do. We're not going to go back with troops, probably, but we'll have to go back probably with air power, because there are some things we cannot allow to happen there. I mean, obviously, they cannot take over Kabul, for example, the capital. So, I mean, we're going to have to probably send some air power back. And, again, none of this had to happen. None of this had to happen. There was no reason to change anything in Afghanistan. And in all fairness, President Trump had also said he wanted to pull out. But I don't think Trump would have done it this way. I think Trump would have would have figured out a different way of doing it. He would have maybe slowly gotten them out or reduced the numbers to a very small number. But this idea, hey, we're pulling out on the 11th of September, how ironic is that? That these people are going to be celebrating on the 11th of September in Afghanistan the pullout of the United States. I mean, what does that say to the families of the people who were killed on September 11th, Bill? I don't know who's running this White House, but it cannot be anybody who likes the United States, Bill.
Well, that's a very good point. And once again, we turn to the people who are supposed to be informing us, the American press, and I don't think I've heard once mentioned that we're in Afghanistan because of 9/11. They just either have forgotten or they don't put the two together anymore. But that is why we went into Afghanistan, and we were in Afghanistan as defenders of this country within a few months after 9/11. And it worked rather well. I mean, they did decimate the bases of al-Qaeda. Remember al-Qaeda? That was Osama bin Laden. And now you've got, 20 years later, a new generation of journalists who don't remember 9/11 or think it was a minor event and we shouldn't be concentrating so much on ourselves, you know, all that woke stuff that we're hearing. And we are about to take a foreign policy defeat. And you're dealing with a president who has great problems, cognitive problems, and you're dealing with a vice president who is almost a nightmare if you think of her taking over the presidency. I mean, Kamala Harris says no matter what she does, she becomes more and more unpopular. It may be unfair. It may be unfair. But, you know, she has made her own bed. She was selected entirely out for the wrong reasons because of identity politics. And here she is in a situation where she might at some point have to take over a major international crisis or several of them at the same time. Remember, we have a crisis involving Iran. And one involving China, a very big one involving China, and it's in its military buildup. I cannot see her coping with these things.
No, and hopefully she has the right people around her, but that's a big question mark in itself. Bill, we're going to take a little break, and we'll be right back. We got a lot more to get into with our friend Bill Katz. We'll be right back. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. Bill, you mentioned in our first segment today, you mentioned the name of Mr. Cox, who is running the party, the Republican Party in New York. And I just wanted to tie this in. It was 47 years ago today that President Nixon left and President Ford became president. And that young Mr. Cox that you're talking about was standing behind his father-in-law, President Nixon, when he gave that farewell address to the staff there. But what amazes me, Bill, about this incident, Nixon to Ford, is how few people remember this. Now, it is 47 years ago, and that is a long time. I mean, let's be honest, 47 years is a long time. But nobody, does anybody remember this day, Bill?
We seem to have a press that believes history began 2 weeks ago. By the way, just to let me correct myself, Ed Cox is the former chairman of the New York Republican
State. All right.
He is not the current one. But
he is married to Tricia Nixon, right? He's
married to Tricia Nixon.
Yeah, that's what I thought, yeah.
And he ran the party. Nobody noticed any difference. I mean, you know, he came in and came out, and there it was. The Republican Party in New York is pretty disgraceful. They have an opportunity, and you made this point, to win two major elections in New York. One is the mayoralty of New York, and they nominated a man who is kind of a pseudo cop who ran a very good organization called the Guardian Angels, but he ran on his own name recognition and got the Republican nomination because nobody was really running against him. I mean,
right.
the Republican Party basically abandoned the campaign before it began, when in fact they have a good chance of winning. They had a good chance of at least putting up a good fight on the same thing as on the state level. The Democratic Party, through Andy Cuomo, is in some difficulty. Andrew Cuomo is under severe pressure to resign over sexual misconduct charges and over his handling of the nursing homes in New York during the pandemic. And yet the Republican Party does not come forward with one person who could really take him on. And they have these people. I mean, they have people with name recognition. They have look at what's happening in California. The governor may well be recalled, and Larry Elder, who is a decent and good man, he's not a politician. He's a talk show host. You see him on television all the time. Is now leading in the polls, and you can basically create a candidacy of a willing and good person if you get behind that candidacy. But here in New York, I don't know. There's, you know, the big name in New York to always consider is the name Trump. I don't know if he has any role here. I don't know if he is behind the scenes trying to do something for the party. You know, it's been mentioned that Ivanka Trump could emerge as a candidate, and don't underestimate her.
She would be a great
before.
Candidate for mayor, Bill.
Yes,
I think they live there, candidate. Right? They live in New York, right? Ivanka and her husband.
I don't know if that's correct anymore. I think their residency may be Florida.
Okay. I want to get the heck out of New York, because it seems like the only thing the New York government does is investigate Trump. I mean, the city is falling apart. The state is falling apart. They're losing businesses like crazy. But they sure have a lot of people investigating Trump so that they can discover that somebody – in his organization 10 years ago, I guess, didn't report a rental car or something like that. What a disgrace that is.
Yes. That whole investigation is a farce. The man has been in business with his family for 70 years,
right.
70 years in Manhattan. They've never had a serious problem. To the best of my knowledge, that no one was ever indicted for anything. His taxes were paid. But it's one investigation after another. And as some commentator said, and I don't recall who it was, when is the last time you saw a former president investigated like this? I can understand, you know, the politics being what it is, that during a presidential term, somebody will try to become famous by investigating the president. But a former president? Once they're out of office, there's kind of a history and an understanding. Just leave them alone. Let them fade into history. And let's go on and you know, build a better country. But you see these investigations right and left of a former president. The Democratic Party is absolutely obsessed with Donald Trump.
Right. No, I agree. And then to go after him for such ridiculous things as a tax problem over a rental car or whatever, it's pretty insane. But you're right about California. There could be a Larry Elder in their future. And I think if nothing else, he would be a potential – I mean, can you imagine a ticket in 2024, let's say DeSantis and Elder? That would be an interesting ticket. That would be – and definitely he would put himself at that level, presidential level or vice presidential level, if he were to win. Well, I got a few other things I want to touch on today because there's so much in the agenda. I mentioned the anniversary of the Ford to Nixon or Nixon to Ford. Just because, you know, I was expecting a lot more coverage, but I guess, you know, as you said, they have a short, you know, these journalists today don't seem to remember something like that. I guess maybe I'm unusual for remembering stuff, but I remember within 5 years I saw two of the most incredible things that anybody can see, landing on the moon and a president resigning. Back then I thought those be two big things that I'd be telling my children or grandsons about. But nobody cares, Bill.
Well, you know, it was said during that period, and I think it's true today, that a generation, which used to be defined as 33 years, is now about 5 years. History goes so quickly, so much happens, that within 5 years, changes are made that change the landscape of things. And that's very true. I mean, we went to the moon in 1969. Nixon resigned, I believe, 1974.
5 years later, exactly.
Yes, yes. And then we had the period of the late 70s, which were probably one of the dullest periods in American history, because Jimmy Carter, who was one of the dullest men in American history. And then we had this incredible revival, the Nixon era, I mean, in which the country just turned around and seemed to go up again. And we have not had a change like that, a dramatic change, since that era. People thought when Obama was elected in 2008, there would be dramatic change in America. There really actually wasn't that much, because he wasn't that effective. What is effective now is the party that he built, a left-wing party that is now effective in the wrong ways.
Right, exactly. And we're going to talk a little bit about that, because you wrote a post about the Democrats being a little worried about 2022, though. Before we get there, I'm kind of jumping because there's so many things on my agenda here. The Olympics just concluded last night, Bill, and I guess not many people watched it. I watched a little bit of it. Some of the events are interesting. I have to confess, the swimming events I've always found to be very interesting. But the country, maybe I'm wrong in saying this, but I believe very seriously the country sent a message to NBC, who just happened to be carrying the Olympics this year, and the message was, we're sick and tired of woke, and if you keep putting woke on the screen, we're turning it off. It worked, because they had a devastating ratings number, Bill.
Yes, the NBC ratings were down 50%, 50%, from the last Olympics, and I think people are analyzing it, but I think you hit it right on the button. It is very hard to watch and be enthusiastic when, first of all, there's a commercial every 5 minutes, and the commercials are all telling us how terrible we are. You know, we have to do this, we have to do that, we have to do this. I mean, the one that particularly offended me was Toyota. I mean, it isn't even an American company. They're lecturing us and how we should act and how we should behave. It's like the Olympics became a finishing school, you know?
Right. That's right.
You sit down this way, you button your shirt that way, otherwise you're a racist.
Right,
and,
exactly.
Fortunately, we did have on the American team some athletes who did behave very well and very graciously about the United States. There are a large number of athletes of color representing the United States, and with a few exceptions, they really did conduct themselves very nicely. The women's soccer team got beaten all over the place, and I think they had victory in hand before the Olympics, and it didn't turn out that way. So their antics didn't show up very much.
Yes, and that's right, and I think that. I'm not saying they lost, you know, anybody can be beaten on a sporting event, but I just think that most of the country was not that unhappy that they lost. But I did find something interesting in the last couple of days of the Olympics. It did seem that NBC got the message because they couldn't show the American flag anymore. I mean, it was
That's like, right, all of
a sudden it was patriotic NBC, but I think it was too late. But I do think the larger message got through, and that is that Americans are sick and tired of woke. And if you're going to bash the United States, well, don't expect me to watch it. And it seems to, at least the ratings would show that. Now, some people are saying it's because of the time zone. I don't buy that. I really don't. I think if the time zone is a factor, yes. But they can still, I mean, I watched a couple of things on prime time because I'm interested in the swimming events. I've always been absolutely amazed by the skills of these people, having tried swimming myself. I know how difficult it is. But anyway, Bill, I'm glad to see the Olympics ended, and I'm glad to see that NBC got the message. Okay, you wrote a post about the Democrats in 2022, and I want to get into that because I think the Democrats are starting to realize that they're in deep trouble, Bill, that they've gone too far to the left, and that this message that they have been cultivating is not turning out well for them, Bill.
It's obviously true. I mean, they can't keep on fighting the results of public opinion polls and the results of action. Last week, very important, in Ohio, there was a Democratic primary for the congressional seat vacated by Marsha Fudge, who was the congresswoman, who is now, I believe, secretary, is it health education? Well, she's one of the secretaries in Biden's cabinet, and the primary was between two African-American women, one a radical leftist and the other a moderate, and the moderate won. That is very much a signal. And right here in New York, the new mayor is going to be an African-American, but he is a moderate, and very specifically so. He doesn't try to fudge it. You know, he doesn't try, well, we're for everybody, and everybody is my friend. He said, no, I am in this position, and we are fighting socialism, and came right out and said it, and it's going to be the next mayor of New York. There are other races around the country that seem to be going in that direction as well, and you see the fact that some of the symbols of the woke Democratic Party are in trouble in their own races. We've mentioned already the governorship of California, which will be decided on September 14th in a recall election. And if Gavin Newsom is recalled and the polls show him in a lot of trouble, that's a political earthquake. That's the governorship of our largest state. You find other races around. The Pennsylvania Senate race. In Pennsylvania, there is a chance the Republicans might lose a seat. But I think that the Democrat who has probably got the best chance of being elected is a moderate Democrat. So the message is being sent by voters, by school boards around the country, by young people who are not flocking to the Democratic Party as was expected. And you have a situation where in 2022, the Democratic Party controls the United States House only by five or six votes, with a very, very small number. Traditionally, the party that doesn't hold the White House does well in House of Representative elections in off years, and it does look like there's a very good chance the Republicans will take control of the House. In the Senate, it will be a tougher situation, but and I would love to see us controlling both houses. That could happen. But I think the House is pretty well gone for the Democrats, unless there's a tremendous reversal. Then you go into the 2024 cycle, where you have the Democratic Party with a president who is personally liked. People like him personally, but he is deteriorating. You could just see it before your eyes. I don't know. Nobody knows. Nobody can really make a prediction if he'll even be a candidate in 2024. He says he will be. But should he not be, that party is going to struggle to find a candidate who can be elected.
That's right. No, I think he's it's a situation where the Democrats, I think they've gone too far to the left. The only question is, do they have to go all the way down before they come back? I think that's the only question. And I think that it may be better for them to lose everything in 2022 and rebuild with new faces. A couple of other topics that I just wanted to bring up. The Democrats in Texas, as you know, are still in Washington, but a couple of them decided to go on vacation, which I thought was pretty comical, Bill. I thought it was a Saturday Night Live couldn't do better than these guys are doing for themselves, Bill.
Oh, it's just unbelievable. First of all, the fact that they've been in Washington this long. If a few of them wanted to make a protest trip on using their own funds or party funds, okay, I'll buy that. But the whole bunch of them went to Washington. Nobody knows exactly what they're doing there. Nobody seems to want to see them. You know, I mean, you can't even get an appointment in with your own party. And then, as you said, some of them went off to Portugal on a vacation. I mean, do they have any sense of what this looks like?
Well, obviously they don't, because, you know, they and part of the problem is that I think maybe they're accustomed to being protected by the media. And they think they can get away with these things. But I tell you, the Dallas Morning News came down very hard on the two who left for Portugal.
Yes.
They came down very hard saying that not only had the trip was misguided, but they lied about it. You know, first of all, they wouldn't confirm it. Then they were saying it's fake news. But, you know, it did happen. So, they say, what, the cover-up is worse than the crime? But
yes,
I don't know how much longer they're going to be there, because Abbott is just going to continue to do sessions, one session after another. And eventually they'll have to come back, because somebody's paying for this, Bill, and you would think that at some time, whoever's paying for this, there's all kinds of rumors as to the group paying for this. you know, eventually they're going to figure out that there's a better way to spend money than to keep these people in a hotel doing meetings by Zoom, because nobody wants to see them, Bill.
That's right. Now, tell me, is Abbott up for re-election next year?
Yes, he is. In 2022, he's up for re-election, yeah.
How is he doing?
Pretty right now. He's sitting pretty. I mean, he's this incident that we had with the electricity hurt him a little bit, although I think he's probably gotten over that. Let's hope that there's no other incident like that again. He's going to have a couple of challengers in the primary. A gentleman named Mr. Huffines, who I don't think is much of a threat. He's from a very successful family here in the Dallas area. They own a bunch of businesses and car dealerships, very well-known name. A very generous family when it comes to charity and stuff like that. So they're a very popular family. And he's also being challenged by Alan West, the former congressman, who I honestly think he's – and former head of the party here in Texas, too.
Yes.
And I don't understand his challenge. I really don't, because I don't think he's going to win. And it's a waste of – in my opinion, it's a waste of talent, because I wish he was running against some Democrat in some congressional district. Look, we're going to be redistricting a lot of districts, because we're going to be adding two more seats to the Congress. So everybody's district is going to look different in 2022. And there are some Democrats who won very close elections who are vulnerable. And a guy like West, with his name and money, could very easily topple a Democrat in the House. So I'm kind of disappointed he decided to go for governor rather than the House. I really am.
Yes, I think that's a very poor choice. That's a very poor career choice, because it's going to be held against him.
I mean, he could run for Congress and then later run for the governor. I mean, that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
I just think his timing this year is not good. And I'm hoping that – I mean, I intend to vote for Abbott, and I'm hoping that Abbott will survive the or get 50% or more in the primary, so he doesn't have to go to a runoff. But if he does go to a runoff, he probably will win. The more interesting race here in Texas, Bill, the one that I think is going to get a lot of national attention is – the Attorney General, because Attorney General Paxton is being challenged by George P. Bush, who is a very interesting political figure, and also by a lady named Sarah Guzman, who is a former Supreme Court justice here. And what's interesting is the message that you now have two out of the three candidates running for Attorney General in Texas who are Hispanic. George P. Bush, the son of Jeb and his Mexican wife, and Sarah Guzman, who is Hispanic all the way. I mean, a very successful lawyer. So it'd be interesting what impact that has on the state. But I got to get into one more story, Bill, because I knew that you would have something to say about Mr. Obama and his birthday party. Now, happy birthday, Mr. President. I think it's great that you made it to 60. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. But my goodness, did he have to have a party like this? The New York Post has some pictures of it, and apparently they had all kinds of fancy stuff in this party. I mean, it was like a party for a celebrity, not a former president. You would think that a former president would have the common sense to say, you know what, this is a little bit too much. Let's just... I don't know. I was amazed that he did it, Bill, but I guess he did it, and now all these photos are not helping his image, Bill.
No, they're not, and I think he's always had a bit of a tin ear politically, interestingly enough, despite his successful campaigns for the White House. He just seems to have lost touch with the people. He built this or bought this $17 million mansion in the middle of a pandemic. I mean,
right.
My God, how can you just show such insensitivity and then plan this massive gala? I mean, you know, you would think it would be like the Queen's birthday in Britain.
Right.
I mean, he does, I think, consider himself something of a royal figure. And now there is rumor that Michelle Obama might in some way get back into politics with a friend of hers to fundamentally change America. I mean, they ought to look at what's happening in the country. Their kind of politics is going out of style. The country is turning against this, fundamentally change this, fundamentally change that. I think the American people are beginning to worry about the condition of their institutions, the institutions that have sustained the country. And when people say fundamentally change, I think this time they're going to look at it with two eyes.
Right. And also you would think that it would have been better to have had the party in Chicago. I mean, I thought he was a community organizer. Didn't he come from there?
Yeah.
It would have been nice to have had the party there and could sort of go back to the roots, as they like to say, and go back to his roots as a community organizer, if he remembers that. I sometimes wonder how much organizing he actually did, but that's another story. He could have, you know, doesn't he have a presidential library in Chicago, Bill?
Yes, they're building the library there, and it's rather controversial because apparently he kind of moved in or moved back with the idea that Chicago was his city and he could do anything he wanted with the library. Apparently there are some people who were offended by the way he did it and the fact that it will change a neighborhood. And that it should have been more stately in the way he did things. Who was Barack Obama? Barack Obama was a local politician in Chicago who got to be a U.S. senator. Basically, he's a part of the political machine in Chicago, and he became president of the United States, didn't do much for 8 years that people can think of, and I think still wants to be known as a power in American politics, and I think his sense of himself is overblown. He should remember that when people leave the presidency, it is very difficult to sustain real influence. Americans do not believe in dynasties. They really don't. Look at the Roosevelt situation. President elected four times, and the highest any of his children ever got was U.S. congressman.
Right. Or even the Kennedys. I mean, the Kennedys are pretty much out of the story. I mean, obviously, you had a president, two senators, I mean, extremely well-known, the three of them. And then they did have I think one of their sons became a congressman, another daughter became a lieutenant governor. But, I mean, the Kennedys are pretty much gone. I mean, I don't know of a single Kennedy who has any political future right now, Bill. Kennedy. There may be some other reason, but not because he's a Kennedy. I mean, that last name is no longer magical, Bill.
It isn't. I mean, President Kennedy was assassinated in 1963, which is, I think, almost 60 years ago, isn't it?
That's right. Yeah. It'll be 58, in November.
I mean, there are very few people. Yes. There are very few people alive today who remember him, you know, as being a factor in their lives. They are elderly. The new generation, the name Kennedy, that doesn't mean that much. Yes, it is true that the Kennedys stayed in federal power until the death of Edward Kennedy, Senator Ted Kennedy. That was not that many years ago, but that's a very different thing. Dynasties are actually pretty rare. If you look at the fact that the signers of the Declaration of Independence and look at the last names, I don't think there's one family that's prominent today. We're not like Great Britain. We're not like Great Britain. And people often resent the idea of descendants of presidents trying to get into politics because they feel they're just using the name.
Right. And in some cases they are. And I think that's fair. In some cases they are. You know, we to some extent have a Bush dynasty. You know, you had two presidents. And now here in Texas you have potentially a future governor. But, you know, that's I'm not sure how much more that's going to be. I mean, if George P. Bush loses in the primary, I'm not sure how much longer he's going to go. I do think you're right. I think people, they say, okay, the Bush had their time. I think it was, in fact, Mrs. Bush, the first Mrs. Bush, who said too many Bushes when she was talking about her son Jeb running. And she may have been just right on the nail, Bill.
I think she was. It's, you know, there's this country has a fetish for the word fair, and it's a good fetish. They like fairness in politics. I mean, Franklin D. Roosevelt Jr., he actually had the name of his father, became a local politician in New York and got himself mixed up with the Dominican Republic and went down in flames. That should be an example that there are no guarantees just because you have the name. You get some name recognition for a while. And sometimes people even think that the originator of the name is still alive and still running. But it doesn't, as you say, last that long.
No, it really doesn't. But I don't know what the consequences are going to be of this Obama birthday, probably. Not probably. I'm sure people will forget about it in a couple of days. I do think it was interesting. One last point I wanted to make, that Chuck Todd of NBC Meet the Press had Dr. Fauci yesterday. And I saw a little bit of it. And Dr. Fauci was asked questions about the cyclist in South Dakota, these motorcycle guys, about did not get a question about spreading at the border or at Obama's party. And then people wonder why they have doubts about Chuck Todd. I mean, how can Chuck Todd have Dr. Fauci there and not ask him those two questions, Bill?
Of course. And look, Meet the Press is no longer the prestigious program it was when I was growing up. When it was presided over by professionals of how could I forget the name of the man who founded
Stupak,
it?
Wasn't it? It starts with an S. Stupak, or wasn't that the I'm not pronouncing
I've forgotten.
ST, I remember, but the initials were ST. That's what I remember.
And I have some DVDs of programs back then in the early 60s, and they were very serious programs, very serious panels, asking good questions. Today it's kind of infotainment, and Chuck Todd is so obviously a Democrat, and he doesn't try to hide it, and he does not try to maintain the traditional standards of the program. Meet the Press, I believe, was the first a television program in this country's history to be sustained over a period of years. And you would think NBC would regard it as a kind of sacred institution, but nothing is sacred anymore in that industry.
Well, I used to watch it a lot. One last thing I'll say. I used to watch it a lot when this young man was the host, who passed away, unfortunately, in 2008. I can't think of his name right now, but he was a very good host. He had some very good questions. And again, you know, when I say good questions, I'm not saying disrespectful questions. I think a lot of people confuse. They think that a good journalist is someone who screams at the president or shows disrespect against people. No, that's not the way I would do it. I would simply ask some fair questions. And to have Dr.
Yes.
Fauci in your show on Sunday, and you're talking about the spreading the virus and how terrible it is as these motorcyclists in South Dakota, and not to ask him about the border or even say something about the Obama party, I don't know.
Yes.
It left me a little hungry, as they say, Bill.
Sure. Well, I just remembered the name of the man, of the great Meet the Press founder, Lawrence Spivak.
There you go. I knew
name.
That it was SP something, yeah.
Yes. And he was an absolutely straight-down-the-line reporter, did an excellent job, and everybody watched Meet the Press. Today it's a lightweight program.
Yeah, I don't even know. I mean, I don't keep up with the Sunday morning ratings, but I don't know how well they do. But it was not. He tries to be, Chuck Todd tries to be, you know, very balanced and all of that. But gosh, I wish he would listen to himself, because if he would listen to himself objectively, he would know that he's not very balanced. But again, I guess that's why nobody watches these shows. And maybe the public is smarter than they are, Bill.
I think the public is always smarter than they are. By the way, the person you were thinking of who died was Tim Russert.
That's it. I used to like him a lot. I thought he was very good.
Good journalist. But that type of traditional journalism has faded away. It has to come back if journalism is to survive, but they haven't gotten the message.
No, they really haven't. They're falling apart, and everybody knows it, and hopefully they know it, because they're the ones who are going to get overwhelmed by the tsunami. Bill, have a great week. And I look forward to your comments during the week at Urgent Agenda, and we'll talk later.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much, Bill. Have a wonderful week.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
Our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Happy birthday, President Obama. And we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye, everybody.